Welcome to Business Spotlight on Money Radio WPSE. Business Spotlight is heard weekly this time on 1450 AM and 107.1 FM. Today's guest is Dr. Rajesh Govindaswamy, Medical Director of UPMC Hammett's Kidney Transplant Program. Dr. Govindaswamy, thanks for joining us for this month's edition of Business Spotlight featuring UPMC Hammett. We spoke before the show, and you prefer to go by your nickname as Dr. Sammy, so that's what we will refer to you as during the course of this program. And Dr. Sammy, we're going to start at the top by mentioning that you're a very big part of UPMC Hammett's kidney transplant program here in Erie, so can you share with us a little bit about the path that led you to UPMC Hammett?
I've been a transplant nephrologist for the last 15 years and served in two different institutions prior to arriving at UPMC Hammett. The reason I chose to join UPMC Hammett is because UPMC, as we all know, has a tremendous name in the transplant world based on Dr. Starzl, who actually was a pioneer in the transplant world. And they have been very successful in teaching the world the techniques and the immunosuppression protocol. And also, UPMC Hammett had a unique location in terms of it was located in a part of the Pennsylvania where there was a growth and a huge need for it needed. And based on the administration's dedication to create a very successful program. So based on these factors, I took it as an opportunity to use the knowledge I've gained from the other programs to use it to the benefit of working on a program to develop that and also to serve the community.
If we could, let's go over some of the stats in regards to kidney transplants. How many successful kidney transplants have been done in Erie?
Erie program is relatively new in the transplant world in the U.S. There's only been a handful of programs that have started in the last decade because there's a lot of bureaucratic red tapes and things that have to be done before even a program is started. So Erie is a very young program. It's only started in 2015, and it's been we've been transplanting for the last 7 years, and we got the full 5-year approval 3 years ago, and that's very hard to get without any problems. And we have done so far for the last 6 years, we've done close to 85-plus transplants, and about 46 of them were from living donors, and about 40 of them were from deceased donors.
So, Dr. Sammy, a couple of quick questions. The breakdown you gave is almost 50-50 between living and deceased donors. Is that normal? And also, I understand that the kidney transplant team at UPMC Hammett has a great relationship with the team at UPMC Pittsburgh. Can you go over with our listeners the benefits of having that relationship intact?
Right. So, UPMC Pittsburgh has been a pioneer in terms of creating novel immunotherapies, and Dr. Starzl is a pioneer in transplant world. So that institution is named the Starzl Institute in UPMC Pittsburgh. And we have a very, very close working relationship with them. In fact, we are an extension of them, but we are a center by ourselves. So we kind of build on the strengths of UPMC Pittsburgh, and we also have the benefit of being a hospital that caters to our patients in a very special manner because of our location and our hospital's dedication towards it. So I try to say it as we have the best of both worlds. We are able to get the expertise from them, deliver the same kind of care because our surgeons are the same surgeons who transplant in Pittsburgh. So it's the same doctor there is the same doctor we get here, but we are able to afford another layer of special attention because of our size. We're not as big as them, so we're able to cater to our patients' needs in a very personalized manner. And in that process, we're able to accomplish a better care, I would say. And answering your second question about what is different between living and deceased donor transplants, there's a lot of patients waiting for organs on the transplant list. If I want to get to the statistics part of it, there are over 110,000 patients based on the USRDS data, which is a very conservative data. There are 110,000 patients waiting in the U.S. and approximately 7,500 patients in Pennsylvania waiting for an organ at this time. And about 90% of those organ needs are for kidney transplants. And unfortunately, because there are so many waiting on transplants and there's only a limited organ that are available in the donor pool, we encourage all our patients to either become a deceased donor recipient and also encourage to do the living donor as well to supplement and help them to get a kidney transplant earlier. So normally everyone would be eligible for a deceased donor transplant, which people get once somebody passes away and the organ is preserved and transplanted in an expeditious manner as possible. However, if somebody has a living donor, we have a tremendous amount of control on that because we are able to choose the time, which is convenient for the patient, convenient to the donor, convenient to everybody else involved from the transplant team. So everybody gives their best, and the outcomes are also reflective of that perfect attempt, and living donor kidneys live longer, and they have better outcomes and results.
What makes someone a kidney transplant candidate?
Okay, so when they need either a kidney or a pancreas or any of those organs for that matter, and we predominantly deal with kidney transplants and occasionally with transplant for other organs such as pancreas, we evaluate them initially as well. So when someone has kidney failure, they need a what we call a renal replacement therapy, where they need some other method to replace the functionality of the kidney. And the easiest and the simplest form of that is dialysis. And obviously dialysis is not the ideal state, but it saves life. It, you know, it provides the necessary treatment, but it has its own drawbacks in terms of the, you know, how the patients tolerate it and how taxing it's on the body and such. Where transplant comes in, it's transplant is the next step up, and it basically gives them the choice of having a normal life, close to a normal life. And they get their life back, they get their energy back, their control on their time, and their hopes and dreams come alive. The only thing we ask the patients to do when they get transplanted is to follow up with their medications, follow up with their transplant follow-ups, and, you know, be more involved in their care and involve us and help us to help them in the process.
Dr. Sammy, what is the ratio of successful kidney transplants compared to the ones that run into complications and aren't a success?
Yeah, transplant has come a long way. The first transplant was done in the 1950s between twins, and that lived a short while, but that gave us a tremendous amount of experience, and we have done transplants over close to 50 years now. And the biggest problem with transplant is because we are transplanting another person's organ to the recipient, the body is going to perceive it as a foreign organ, and it's going to try to reject it. And that's the first barrier we have to come across. So the immunosuppressants have come a long way. We have 25 to 30 years of experience with them. And based on the present data, which is available, our transplant rejection rates are as low as 5% or less, meaning 95% of the transplants do not have a rejection episode. So we have come a long way. That used to be 50%, meaning every other patient would have rejected 25 years ago. Now it's down to less than 5%. So that we have come a long way, but it's still not 100%, right? So there's still the potential for rejections and other, and because we give them immunosuppression to prevent rejection, we also make them a little bit more prone to infections. So that is a balance we got to be very carefully playing. We got to kind of make sure that they are immunosuppressed, but not too much. And that is the fine line we walk. And that is a challenge, and that's what we work, and that's why we follow the patients closely. But to put things in perspective, our success rates are close to 95 to 98%. When I say success rates, I'm talking about the kidney being alive or being functional after 1 year, you know, across the board. So that is the numbers we're talking about. Very, very rarely, it hasn't happened to us. You know, there are, again, these patients have other comorbid conditions like heart disease and other cancers and such, which we have no control on, and they can have some complications related to that. But from a purely kidney perspective, our success rates are quite encouraging and successful, and close to 95% plus.
It's amazing to hear how high the success rate is. That is great news. And these patients truly get a new lease on life after the procedure, don't they?
Absolutely. You hit the right word there. In the 70s, it's not even that far away. 40 years ago, when you have a kidney disease, it was synonymous with death, right? Meaning there's no treatments before dialysis even became available in the 75 or 76 when Medicare made them eligible for that. It used to be a disease where people lived a few months or such. Now there is dialysis. It keeps them alive. But again, it takes its toll on the body. And then getting transplanted is getting back their lives. The second lease, like you mentioned, that's exactly what that is.
A few moments ago on the program, you went over the numbers, and they're just staggering, the amount of people that are waiting for a transplant. What makes someone an ideal kidney transplant donor?
I think the main thing is, again, there are some age, you know, we want to be reasonable. We want someone to come forward to be a donor between 18 to 70 years of age. And that's just a general guideline. But most importantly, we want them to have the genuine desire, an altruistic desire to donate. And we want them to be ready to get evaluated. And we want them to be of reasonable, healthy state. We don't want them to have any chronic diseases. And one of the main things, we don't want them to be diabetic, because that puts them at a slightly higher risk.
Walk us through how someone becomes a kidney donor.
It's very simple. All they got to do is, UPMC Hammett has a website. We have made it as customized and as free as possible. All they have to do is either call the number. The number is 814-877-3625, or they can go to UPMC donor website, and they just have to click a few buttons and answer a few questions and start the process. And then we want them to start the process. We can't actively go and pursue them. We want them to come from them, because it's completely based on an altruistic desire. So they have to make the first step, and then we'll hold the hands and walk them through the process.
A startling statistic that I learned about the other day, Dr. Sammy, is 26 million Americans have kidney disease and 3 million have type 1 diabetes. We've gone over how great the need is for donors nationwide, but what about specifically in Erie? I can only imagine that the need here is just as great.
Yeah, so chronic kidney disease is being named as the silent epidemic, silent killer. Right. It's been the problem with kidney disease is that it's a very silent disease till it gets to the later stages of life. So the estimates are that as many as 26 million Americans who have kidney disease. And let's look at this. Right. The population of the U.S. is approximately 330 million. And imagine 26 million of that having kidney disease. So we're talking about every 1 in 10th person having some sort of kidney disease. Right. So but the good news is, not everyone ends up with end-stage kidney disease, right? But that's another number. Kidney disease is having just a low kidney function. They just have to be careful. But of this, approximately 110,000, at least 500,000, half a million of them end up with what we call end-stage renal disease. And in that number, almost most of them qualify to get dialysis, and very few choose not to pursue that route, and then it just, you know, they, because of other comorbid factors and age, they just choose not to have, and they pass away peacefully. But healthy, otherwise healthy persons, they choose dialysis. But in that, there are 110,000 patients who are actively listed in the whole country to be as a candidates for receiving an organ, right? But again, this takes a lot of testing. And not everyone who comes in qualifies, because we got to make sure that they benefit from that, because the organs are limited. So at the end of this, we have 110,000 patients based on the latest statistics who are listed. And as far as Erie is concerned, the same ratio applies. You know, our Erie population is approximately 100,000, I would say. And I would say at least 1,000 patients need an organ, a kidney transplant. And the chronic kidney disease might be as many as 5,000 patients might have chronic kidney disease, but 1,000 will need an organ. And based on our center statistics, we have almost 100 patients on the list, active list, who are ready to be transplanted anytime. And then we have another 100 to 150 patients who are being actively evaluated. That is, they're getting tested, they're getting cardiology and other testing done in the process of becoming a kidney recipient.
Not surprising to hear the local numbers after some of the other stats we've gone over during the program. Can you walk us through typical wait times for a kidney transplant?
Okay, so because there's so many patients waiting on the list, and the numbers are limited in terms of how many patients are becoming a deceased donor, organ donors, there's a huge disparity between the number needed and the number that's actually available. So the wait times are pretty longer. It used to be a couple of years when, 15 to 20 years ago. Now it's up to 5 years. It could be a year or less if you're in a certain blood type, and if it could be a year longer if you'd say a certain other blood type. Some rare blood types such as AB negative, because there's not a whole lot of them competing for them, they might have a shorter list, close to 4 years or less. But the majority of the people are either O or A positive, and those patients have, because there's so many others waiting for it, their wait times are close to 5 years or plus.
Why should someone who's listening to the program today consider becoming a living donor?
I think by taking the step to register as an organ donor, you are making a huge step. You're actually saving people's lives. You're giving hope to those on the waiting list. And there's nothing more altruistic or more helpful than providing another lease of life to another person. So I would request everyone who is a part of this life-saving and healing process to come forward and register as an organ donor. And by that process, they become educated for themselves, and they also make a huge difference in somebody else's lives.
And this is a part of today's program that we're really looking forward to. Dr. Sammy, if you could share, and obviously without naming specific names, some of your favorite successful patient transplant stories.
Oh, there are some very, very compelling stories. I could, just top of my head, I could say a mother in her 20s who just had a child who was a year old, who was able to return to her life to care for her child and even go back to her job to be a teacher. And this happened just 2 years ago. And there's another person who got transplanted who basically was giving up on life, who was able to change things around and become a nurse, a fully qualified nurse after she got transplanted. And then there's another person who was able to go back to his work. There are many, many who are able to return back to their work, and many who are able to lead a very successful life, go back to school. Many choose to become nurses or another somebody else in the healthcare field because they feel like they have so much, they've learned so much in the process, and they want to give it back.
Those are amazing stories. That is just terrific. Can you walk us through the procedure from a living donor perspective, the risks involved, some of the details of what the procedure is really like? Can you share that with our listeners?
Okay, so living donor, we already talked about, they just have to be in a healthy state. They got to be between 18 to 70 years of age, just to make, those are just general guidelines, and to be of reasonable health. And the most compelling thing is for them to be having this altruistic desire to donate. So once they take the first step and they call us, or they sign up on the website, we call them, we set up an interview, we bring them in, and we let them watch a video to explain to them the whole process. It kind of gives them a rundown in a very non-confrontational manner. And then we let them see what a living donor advocate. Her role is basically to be a neutral person, to talk to the patient, to make sure that she is able to talk to them and ensure that their intentions are genuine. And if they have some concerns, she's not a medical person. So basically, she wants to make sure that they are taking that decision based on, without any pressure or any kind of promises and such. The one thing we don't want is somebody either pay money or, do something coercive to force somebody to donate. We don't want pressures involved. We want somebody to do it out of free will and good thoughts, right? So that's the whole premise of that. And once she gives the green light, then she sees the pharmacist who talks about the general pharmaceutical medications and such. And then there's a social worker who holds their hands, talk about their family, who's going to take care of them and such. And then there's a financial person who basically makes sure that the donors do not end up with any tremendous amount of medical bills. And also to make another point, the whole donation process for the most part is free, in the sense the donors do not have to pay anything. The whole donation process is paid by the recipient's insurance. So at least the vast majority of it, unless there are some specific exceptions in their policies. But for the most part, it is something they don't have to be burdened with. And then also the donors then meet with the transplant coordinators. And finally, they meet up with me. And I make sure that I do not meet them early because I want them to get a very unbiased opinion from everybody else. And then I kind of summarize the whole process. Me or somebody else in my position meets up with them. And we ensure that the patient is not under any pressure. We do a thorough executive level checkup on them. We do a full history, a physical, and make sure we go through their life habits. And if they find anything, any red flags there, we teach them how they can handle that. And we repeatedly ask them that, you know, we want to make sure that they're not under any pressure and such. And at the end of the meeting, we give them the option to either return to follow up as being another donor. If they feel that it's too much for them to handle, we give them the option to opt out. So there's no pressure in any of this process at all. And at any time during this process, they can back off and say they don't want to pursue it. And then nothing is held against them. But once they want to, they decide, and most of them actually, they decide to come back because they're most of the times they are impressed with the information they get. They learn a lot about themselves. They learn about their health, their own conditions, their habits such as smoking or alcohol, and they actually become healthier persons because they try to quit these things. And then when they come back, we do further testing on them. And then, you know, once they found to be a suitable match and they want to proceed with it, they can either donate to their person they want to, which we call them directed donation. Usually it's a family member or it's somebody, a friend or somebody else they want to help. Sometimes we also get what we call altruistic donors who basically want to give it to anybody. And those are also encouraged. And then we try to either match them with the persons they want to. And sometimes if there are some antigens and blood types that are not compatible, then we also have an ability to do what is called pair donation because we work closely with the Pittsburgh Center and also sometimes with our UPMC sister organization in Hattiesburg. We are able to have a two-way and sometimes even a three-way swap where somebody is able to give somebody else in Pittsburgh and then that group pair, the other person will give it to us. And that happened quite a few times over the last few years. So we have the ability to do that as well.
Dr. Sammy, there are definitely some organ donation myths out there. You've already mentioned the preferred age range, so that helps dispel one of them. But a history of medical illness, other factors like that. Can you go over some of those myths and educate the listeners as to why those are just myths?
For the most part, they are untrue. Like I said, that's a very broad generalization. I think that, you know, I wouldn't take it fully on the face value. Like I said, most of our donors, you know, from 18 to 70 is when we encourage them. We have also done some patients up to 75. I mean, they are in good health and they have no other medical conditions, but that's done on a case-by-case basis. So to generally say somebody's too old, I would not take that to 100% accurately because, again, each person has to be seen. Beyond 75, they have to be seen on an individual basis. Generally speaking, 18 to 70 is when we encourage them to do it.
You've seen, and we've gone over so many different stats, and there's been a lot of good information shared on the program today, Dr. Sammy. But again, you've seen the impact that a single donor can have on someone. I want you to discuss that for a moment.
Absolutely. When you use the word donor, we could be either a diseased donor or a living donor. The diseased donor, you basically have to sign up at the motor vehicle services or letting a family member know that if you pass away, you know you are going to be a donor. That's a deceased donor, where then you can, they will take organs ranging from your cornea to your kidney and liver, and heart and lung and pancreas and small bowel and all those organs will be taken by the OPO, which is our core for our area. And they do it with ultimate respect to the body. You know, they don't, they take care of the body. They don't do anything to expedite death. And they make sure that the deceased donor is honored. And there are, but their legend lives on. They're able to donate these organs to somebody else who lives in those organs, which basically will not have served anybody if they didn't donate. So that is a deceased donor, right? And then when you have a living donor, we're talking about specific organs, such as a kidney, or sometimes a portion of the liver and such. And our center, we are dealing more with the kidney. So people can donate one kidney and have a normal life they would have otherwise had. And we know that because for the last 50, 60 years, there have been a lot of studies done, and they've shown that just because you donate, your life is not going to be any way changed or inferior to if you have not donated. In fact, people who donated lead much more health conscious and much more healthier lives just because of the fact they donated and they are somebody else watching them. So they're eventually come out even better.
The benefit now of having the kidney transplant program here in Erie with UPMC Hammett is that folks in this region don't have to travel anymore to Pittsburgh or Cleveland. I'm sure that you're proud to be a part of that. And I want you just to elaborate on that a little more, that UPMC Hammett in Erie offers so much for this region that you don't have to go to the even bigger cities anymore.
Yeah, actually, you brought up a very interesting point. I mean, Erie is slightly smaller than Pittsburgh or, let's say, Cleveland or let's say, Rochester, for that matter, right? However, my experience over the last few years is this. I have patients coming all the way close to Pittsburgh, close to Cleveland, close to Rochester, sometimes even from Syracuse and such, to us, telling us, you know, you do a tremendous job. We are getting such a personalized attention here. Your nurses and your coordinators and your whole team is so perceptive to our needs. You explain it to us much more clearly. So we are able to provide the basic plus all these personalized care. And we know all our patients by their first names, all of our patients. Whereas if you go to a big center, you can easily be lost. I worked in centers which are did 300 transplants per year, and I knew how difficult it was to know everyone on a personal level. And that difference is tremendous from a patient standpoint. You know, if your doctor knows you, if your nurses know you, your transplant team knows you, that translates to better care.
Dr. Sammy, we thank you so much for your time today. This has been an enlightening conversation about a very important topic in organ donation and the work that you do with UPMC Hammett's kidney transplant program here. For those in the community that maybe tuned in late, once again, can you go over the information in closing about the best way for someone to become an organ donor?
First step is what I request you to everyone listening to this conversation is if you could first, at the minimum, be a deceased organ donor. Where the way you do that is to either contact motor vehicle services when you renew your license or let your family members know that when you pass away, please donate my organ. I request everyone to consider that because you make a tremendous impact in people's lives by just taking that step and you leave a lasting legacy to the world. At the next level, I would encourage people to consider donating the living organ if they find a family member or a friend or someone they care for to at least give us a call if they want to help somebody and we will walk them through the process. They don't have to say yes. They can always say no at the end of all this, but at least explore that option and thinking in that process also helping themselves to have the satisfaction that they helped create such a huge difference in somebody else's lives.
Thanks for listening to Business Spotlight on Money Radio WPSE. Join us again next week as Dr. Ralph Ford, Chancellor at Penn State Barron, is in the Business Spotlight.